It's a project for Liverpool.
For the Liverpool Biennial.
For Liverpool Biennial.
Speciale Biennale di Liverpool.
Don't let the media have a monopoly on the freedom of speech.
We're the Free Art Collective and we're a British art group. We've been working together since 2004, I think we'd agree. That was an approximate date. But we knew each other for a while before that. And we're here at the Liverpool Biennale for the first time. Interestingly, in the international section, the only British artist in the international section, which is peculiar, but we like that as well, because perhaps we are the alien British artists in the British art scene. So we've produced a series of vinyls which go along this disused shop, which was a DIY shop, very long window space, and we've got, I think there's 8 works along the window. For us, it's quite very exciting because it's for the first time we've brought a series of works which have been shown individually before, but it's a surprise for us and hopefully for other people to sort of see all these works together for the first time, bumping up against each other, because each one is a slogan or a statement which I think are quite interesting ideas combined together for the first time.
Yeah, we were talking about this yesterday because, and like Andy said, I'm Mel, by the way, and like Andy said, usually we show these works individually, so then there's like a sort of reading of them in a sort of somehow an isolation from each other. And so to have the opportunity to put them all together in a huge long space like they are here in the windows is really interesting for us to look at, because then the slogans start to have a relationship to each other. You know, seeing them together like that before and be able to contemplate them in relation to each other, because usually they're bam, 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 and they're one statement in one place at one time. So I think that's really interesting. So what Brian was saying yesterday was they go from being sort of being less didactic and more dialogical because they're speaking to each other a bit more.
You know, you could say that this is like having an album out instead of a single. And, the single is kind of okay and you can like it or not like it, but the album kind of is richer because you start relating one thing to the other. What's interesting for us is that it makes people look at the work in a different way. Instead of it just being about thinking what we're trying to say, when you see one slogan, and people always say, you mean that, and that the slogan means that. But when you've got several different slogans pulling in different directions, then I think that people have to start to look at it as being much more complex and much more layered and nuanced, rather than just thinking that we've said one thing. For this particular piece of work, we selected works that we'd already made, but we wanted them all to have a strong connection to the theme of the show, which is about a kind of critical look at retail, and to the space itself, which is an old shop. And so we selected works that shared the theme of slogans about retail, commodification, the politics of advertising and products and so on. So that's the thing that they all share. What we've got then here is the biggest piece of work that we've ever done. So in a sense, we've always worked on a kind of large scale, a public scale, but this is the first time we've occupied this amount of public space. So for ourselves, we always imagine the work having this kind of public impact, but never physically been able to do that before.
Gli slogan non descrivono il mondo così come noi lo conosciamo, ma ne chiedono uno al suo posto, dicono i Free Collective. E se la scelta di lavorare con il linguaggio e di inserirlo in una dimensione pubblica li avvicina ad altre esperienze artistiche inaugurate tra gli anni 70 ed 80, Mel Morgan ci spiega cosa invece li allontani da quelle stesse pratiche, da artiste come Barbara Kruger e Jenny Holzer.
Well, we've been talking about this for a while, but I would say that they were truisms rather than slogans. So, you know, and I think that's really different. Like a truism, it says something that we know, whereas a slogan transforms something. So we would say one of our slogans is protest is beautiful. So we transform the idea of protest into something that is beautiful. A slogan by Kruger, I shop, therefore I am, is more of a truism. It's more normative, you know. It's not doing that big transformation that we want to do with our slogan. So I would say that although they may seem to have some sort of relationship to each other because they use text and they use language, I just think that they're, in a way, they're really different, and they use them in very different ways. So there's a difference between a truism and a slogan, and we are interested in slogans.
Advertising wants to convert our desire for a better life into a desire to buy something.
It's kind of odd for us. We just found out that our latest manifesto is now available on the Adbusters site. And when we found out about that, we were a bit kind of uncomfortable with it. We wouldn't have asked them to do that. We wouldn't have approached them and said, you know, we agree with what you're doing and we want to be part of that. It feels a bit strange because it suggests that we're much closer to them than we are. You know, we don't feel that we engage in that kind of, what we would think of as being a very simplistic kind of politics. We've always argued that if you're making art or any kind of culture that's political, then it has to be twice political. It has to be political in what you say, but it also has to be political in what you do. And so, which is why in the images you see us appear. It's not just the slogan on its own. We have to perform the slogan, we have to be part of that, and that's part of our politics of a kind of embodied activity. The problem with Adbusters is they try to make all of the politics work within the image, as if there's no politics of the image itself. And so we try to politicise the image at the same time as having political content. So there's a difference there between our work and that kind of supposedly political work. But we wouldn't want to say that there's such a difference between our use of slogans and the political history of slogans. In fact, we would say that that's where we got the idea from. We didn't invent slogans. Slogans are interesting to us because of the history of politics, not because of the history of Adbusters and not because of the history of marketing and slogos and things like that. We get it from politics because political movements have used slogans like Black is Beautiful. We find that a wonderful use of language. It's a performative, transformative way of saying something. And so then we draw directly off that and then say, protest is beautiful. That's where we get our slogans from, is from the history of slogan use in politics.
I think a manifesto can be a series of slogans, and we've written a manifesto where we've taken parts of that manifestos and made them into slogans. So I think, you know, essentially a manifesto is a long slogan, if you like. So I don't know if you mean the function of it, because I suppose a manifesto is more time based, you know, you've got to spend a bit more time with it, whereas a slogan maybe is a bit more of a quicker sort of instant fix, if you like. And maybe it's a condensed way of saying one thing, where a manifesto operates for us, I think, to sort of say a more complicated and more thorough sort of way of dealing with issues that we're interested in.
Historically, there's always been a relationship between manifestos and slogans. I mean, if you think about Workers of the World Unite is a slogan that was actually at the end of the Communist Manifesto. And you take bits out of the manifesto, and to a certain extent, when you read the slogan or you encounter the slogan, you encounter that as coming from that. That's the context. So the manifesto, in a sense, provides the background to understanding what the slogan's actually about. It doesn't explain it, but it gives you, it articulates it somehow. There's a lot of objects in what we do. We call them props, but they're just objects. So we make things that we then hold with the slogans, which we really perform in the real world. And so the words are, if you like, always embedded in the world. They're embedded with us, they're embedded in objects, they're embedded in real situations, in real places. The words aren't cut off from anything. The words, in a sense, enter you into the world. and the words are always part of that world.
The words are sort of inspired by ideas that we're all the time picking up from critical theorists and other artists and people out there who were inspired by. So it's an ongoing research project for us, and these are just certain points that we produce and we publish a set of ideas that we're trying to develop at the time. So sometimes they're short slogans, sometimes they're much more considered manifestos.
We made some works that were just text, and we weren't in them. They were just words, and so we started to think, well, what's wrong with that? That seemed to have an anonymous sort of voice. Where were they coming from? What, you know, who was saying them? And so then we started to think, we need to stand by what we say. We need to embody them. We need to be there. We wish we'd thought about that a bit earlier when we were a bit younger and a bit thinner and, you know, had more hair or whatever, had less grey hair. But then we thought, oh, no, we're really going to have to... Oh, God, we're really going to have to be in these pictures, and we're going to have to stand by them, because otherwise there's this sort of anonymous voice from coming from nowhere that doesn't... And what we were trying to do was we started wanting to form opinion by publishing. And so in a sense there's a sort of DIY feeling to the way these things are made, in the hope that people can just go away and make their own. You know, there's a sort of... We were talking about them today. They're not slick photographs. They are... Because if they were slick, they would be too near to being advertising. If they were, but really, they're about sort of asking people to start their own counter public sphere and to go and, you know, write what they think on a bag and stand by it in the street and declare it and let others know, and then if others agree, to join in with them.
Well, we thought it just quite simply that we would to be seen to be standing by the work or supporting the work quite physically. That's why we try to devise props. To do that sometimes quite interestingly visually, to catch your eye. So the slogans are more effective, I suppose, because you engage with them. That's why we wear T-shirts, that's why we hold things with these statements on them. With the three of us doing it, because we agree, it's actually a joint slogan, a joint statement about our beliefs. And I think that's what's nice about the windows, is that you see that repetition now. Whereas before, I think we were saying about individually, maybe people didn't understand that, but we're really making a point now and boring people. Look, it's them again, saying something again as you walk down the street. So I think we're not doing it just because we want to be in the picture. It's not for vanity's reason or anything like that. We're seen to be publishing.
We're going to say this, we believe in it. And if you see us standing there, or if you recognise us, you can come and talk to us about it. Or we can always be, you know, we're not scared of saying what we believe in. And so therefore, you shouldn't be scared of saying what you believe in. And if you believe in what we believe in, come and join us and collaborate with us. Or if not, do your own slogan, do your own poster and say what you think, so that we're interested in debates that are not just about consensus or us all liberally agreeing together, but to be able to say, well, we disagree here, and so what happens then, what do we do next? And then so we acknowledge difference and disagreement, and we're trying to bring that out rather than pretend it doesn't exist.
The first step was to understand that there's a kind of politics of the disembodied voice, and that politics is authoritarian. When you see the Financial Times advertising itself with just a statement on a kind of monochrome background, it's as if nobody's written that. It's as if there isn't an editor. There aren't people getting paid to write that. This is just the truth. And so it becomes almost godlike in a way. And so it started out as there's a politics of that disembodied voice, and therefore there's a counter-politics of the embodied voice. What we do by standing with our slogans is the opposite of someone like L'Oreal, who pays someone lots and lots of money to be their face. That's what they call them. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody gets the job as being the face of L'Oreal, mm-hmm. You know, and because the company itself can't be its own face, because then suddenly L'Oreal doesn't have the same qualities that it wants you to think that it's got. So they have to find someone who looks like the product or looks like what the company stands for. There's this horrible kind of mediation about what gets to be represented next to the product, and the opposite of that would be, like you were saying before, rioters or marchers, who, when they go public, when they say what they want to say, it's them doing it. They don't hire actors to go on a march for them, because it's about you saying that this is what I believe, that's why I'm here. You know, you go on the march to stand by something, and your physical presence really counts, whereas the absence of your body is absolutely essential for anyone who's involved in the commercial world. You don't put yourself forward because that ruins the image, you know. So it's the opposite of branding.
The works do appear outdoors often, and here again in this context we're on the street. Although I think in our understanding of how the text operates, we don't just see them as being an external object, like a piece of public art. It just so happens that often we get commissioned to use those types of sites. For us, we've been happy if they'd been indoors. It wouldn't matter to us because
it doesn't make them any more public.
It doesn't make them any more public, just having them on the street for us.
There are these, if you like, two economies, which is the handmade individual or small group who make protest and therefore visualise themselves and speak up for themselves, like with the banners that you're talking about, with their flags and their badges and so on and so forth. And then there's this other economy of the official, expensive advertising public sphere. But in the past, people have suggested to us that we should be only occupying the inexpensive, handmade economy, that's where our kinds of ideas belong. And we refuse that. We think that all the advertising spaces that are left in the world should be colonised by ordinary people, that they shouldn't be monopolised by big companies. So we've resisted doing things like graffiti and things like that, which then turns protest into something unofficial and illegal. You know, effectively what we should do is nationalise all of the advertising spaces and make them available to everybody to share their opinions and have their debates in public. So that's why we occupy the official spaces rather than go down that kind of route of always being, you know, on the street, hidden, you know, secret, you know, nefarious and all of that kind of stuff. So we've avoided, if you like, staying in the economy that we're supposed to belong to.
Isn't it weird talking into my computer? Bye.
Fight against multiculturalism, commodifying your difference.
We do choirs where we read manifestos. It's reading. What's interesting there, we often invite people to come to join the choir, and they receive a copy of the manifesto, for example, and they're invited to read out the sections of the manifesto that they agree with. And as a reading progresses, certain points in the manifesto, some people will be speaking and others won't be, because they won't agree with what's been written. There's a moments within it where we, free, might be saying the words, because it's only us that actually believe in what we've written, and other people won't be saying, I don't agree with that, I'm going to shut up here, what a stupid idea that is, and it will go quiet and just be us. So there's an interesting sort of a frisson in that work. Sometimes everybody joins in, particularly in the bits where there's a good slogan to chant.
It's about the dissemination of them, really. That's why we're much more interested in the public sphere than we are in the public realm or the public domain, because we think that the public sphere of opinion formation is this idea that things are published and disseminated. So if we say a slogan, for us it's the same as, or it's just a different way of performing that slogan. So it's not like there's one unique viewing of a slogan that you see on these windows. If we say them, that's still the slogan. So in terms of the sound of them, or in terms of the words and the language of them, they're still working, they're still being published, they're still being disseminated. And that's really interesting for us. Because then, in terms of these works being documents, they're not documents, because the slogans are always going on. There's no one way of doing them.
One of the things that we've always done, and always tried to do, although it's not always worked out because of other people being involved, like curators, is that each work, the title would always be whatever the slogan was in that work. And so then whenever anybody writes a review of that piece of work, then they would have to, in a sense, republish the slogan, because that's the title of the work. So you get another version of the work inside the review of the work. So sitting here, if we read out some of the slogans, then again, it's just another way for the works, for the ideas to come out. So we're happy, because we're interested in publishing and in dissemination, we're really interested in all the multiple ways in which these ideas can be got out. So in a sense, maybe these, you know, massive images that we've got on the street in Liverpool is just a way for us to get to talk to people like you, and then for us to say the slogans again.
maybe people do take them and use them and misuse them as far as we're concerned, because they might read it in a way which we don't agree with, and that of course happens. We think about this, that we aren't precious about the slogans, in that we think, well, okay, maybe they lose their power, their shelf life, let's forget about that one, let's move on, let's produce a new one, or recontextualise or re-say existing ones in order to activate them again and make them more effective. So it's a continual sort of reflexive process of changing and adapting them for particular contexts, so to make them work.
Apart from this one, where we've actually done it for whatever reasons we've chosen, in the past we've had curators asking us whether we would show a work in their space that we actually made for somebody else's space. We would normally say, well, we made that for a different space, we made that for a different occasion, we made that for a totally different context. If you want a piece of work by us, then you have to commission us to make the work. So the work's never universal in that sense. The work's always very particular, you know. So we'll make a work only out of very particular circumstances. And like Andy says, as soon as those circumstances change, we abandon the work and we move on, and then we think about different work for different situations. So we never think of it as being, you know, existing out of time and out of space. It always exists in time and in space. Also, it's really important we never think that everybody's going to agree with this. We actually try to come up with works that we think some people are going to hate this. If we thought that everyone agreed with what we said, then we probably wouldn't say that. We'd say something else.
Yeah, I mean, you just take the economic function of public art is to increase the value of private property, and we wrote that in 2004, and that's been 6 years. It's been written, lived, and through that time, the context of, because it was written in the context of funding of art in the UK for public space, and those contexts have really changed. So that doesn't mean what it meant before, and it's been used in terms of this as a criticism of art having any sort of social function, and it's been turned in a way in terms of an autonomous statement about, you know, art shouldn't have a social function, therefore, you know, it should be purely for its own sake. So the meaning of that slogan or that statement has shifted because of the circumstances shifting, the contingencies of it. I think that's why slogans are always rewritten and rewritten. Political slogans are always rewritten, because once change is achieved, you know, you no longer need that slogan anymore. You need another sort of slogan that will transform the world, so then you move on to the next sort of slogan. So I think that's what we try and do with them.
Advertising for all or nobody at all. Reclaim public opinion.
Yeah.